Okay, so we like to think a unique organisation. We are focused on enhancing, understanding and enhancing human capability is what we're fundamentally about. Sometimes we refer to that as the pursuit of the 21st century enlightenment. We have our headquarters in London, where I'm sitting right now, in John Adams Street, our beautiful historic building. But the three main parts of what we do is we are a platform for ideas. We have about 120, 130 events a year with key big thinkers around the world, key debates, all that material goes online. We're something of a global online phenomenon, particularly due to something called RSA Animate. So I think 85 million RSA lectures have been viewed online in the last 4 years. Then we have a research and development arm, which is we call it our Action and Research Center. We look at a whole number of areas: education, design, behavior change, public service reform, enterprise. Our emphasis is on practical innovation. We write policy papers, but we're much more interested in experimentation. And also, our model of change is a kind of people-centric model of change rather than a government-centric model of change. In terms of education, we are an umbrella trust for a small but growing family of academies. And then thirdly, and important thing is we have 27,000, 26,500 fellows. I'm sure some of the people at the event will be fellows, and we're grateful for your support. And we've been emphasizing for the last few years, moving from a model in which fellows, as it were, funded what we did at the center, and in as much as fellows did things, they were kind of social activities, to a model in which fellows are really at the heart of our charitable mission. And so fellows now create their own projects, set up social enterprises, work much more closely with our projects. We have a small fund every few weeks, which gives small grants to fellows to take ideas forward. As I sit here now on a Friday morning, there's 40 or 50 fellows downstairs who comprise our social entrepreneurs network, who are working together on case studies and research around social enterprise. Well, so I think that the first thing to say is that we are not an organization, we are not a professional organization in the sense that other associations might be. There's no qualification you have to have to be in the RSA. The RSA fellowship is incredibly varied. So in some senses, we have much less of a take on this question of professional development than an awful lot of other organizations that sound a bit like us, that work in particular professional areas or particular areas of subject or whatever. We have thought in the past about the idea of fellows going on a kind of development journey, and that might be something we look at in the future. But again, that would be very oriented to their interventions in the community. So that's the first thing to say. So that might mean that what I have to say isn't as interesting as you hoped it might be. From the other perspective, however, preparing for today and knowing a little about the idea of professional development, professional learning and development in the schools context, my sense is this, that we are at a kind of pivotal moment in which one model of professional development, which is a traditional kind of didactic model of people learning knowledge, keeping their skills up to date, as it were, and another model, which is to do with people working together in a kind of action research context, quite deep work in relation to their own practice and that kind of model, that there is a kind of clear divide between those two approaches. And in many ways, what's happening is in terms of the first, the traditional approach, particularly of the, you know, technology and what is now available online and the ever-growing sophistication of what is available online, will shift the way in which we think about that and the way in which people can undertake that kind of professional development, which is really important. So I think, and there will be a growing interest in the kind of idea of professional learning, which we talk about when we talk, for example, around school collaborations and things like that, that kind of more in-depth, continuous, action-based development model. And I can't claim to have any expertise, but it seems to me that that kind of model of professional learning and development is, I think we're just scratching the surface of what that might mean. In some ways, schools are further advanced in this thinking than other professions, but I suspect that that model will grow and develop for a variety of reasons. Well, I think it's, again, and I don't want to expose my ignorance, but it seems to me that it's a combination of an approach which is demanding and rigorous in terms of the quality of what goes on, but yes, is bottom up in the sense that it is learning which is grounded in the particular challenges that those professionals are having in the institutions in which they work. And I think part of the reason for that might be that, you know, in a context where, for a variety of reasons, and particularly in the public sector, all activity needs to be kind of demonstrably around kind of improving productivity and achieving outcomes, training budgets are under pressure, it needs to feel as though learning is problem solving. And so I think that's an interesting thing, because, you know, what we know from, for example, the work that's been done on families of schools is that professionals working together in that rich way has to be really rigorous, really challenging. There has to be whole organizational commitment to it. It can't be, you know, people just having a cup of tea and a chat together, or it's worthless. So, you know, it's rigorous, it's demanding, all professionals should do it, but yes, the content of it needs to be something which feels powerfully relevant to those professionals in relation to the challenges they are currently facing in their workplace. And I think that's one of the things that gives it an edge from other forms of training and development, where the training and development, as it were, doesn't necessarily coincide with the challenges people have at work. And my own experience, for example, of forms of training is that you go along, you learn a set of skills, if you don't use them in the next few weeks, you've forgotten all about it. You know. Well, I think, I keep saying this, but I'm going to keep exposing my ignorance. But one of the things that I wanted to say was that I think the thing about rigorous professional learning, collaborative professional, action-based professional learning, keep adding words, is that it is psychologically challenging. And that makes it very different, I think, from conventional forms of professional learning. Because if you are working with other professionals in a context in which you are challenging each other's practice and you are opening up your own vulnerabilities, the things that you need to share, if that experience is going to be powerful, that is quite psychologically testing. And actually, I think possibly the areas where this kind of thinking about professional development are most advanced are those ones which are already explicitly psychologically literate. So they are things like counseling, psychotherapy, where the idea that you need, as it were, to work with colleagues and open yourself up as part of the process of being a good professional, that's kind of intrinsic to the very model. So what interests me here is that it may be that the places that you look at where this stuff is most developed are those places which get from the very beginning that this is to do with quite a deep account of personal development. It's not simply about the acquisition of knowledge and skills. Yeah, as I understand it, and I could be wrong about this, as I understand it, it is good practice for counsellors, obviously lots of people call themselves counsellors, but for good counsellors, for psychotherapists, to have psychotherapy and counselling themselves, because it is recognised that you need to do this to kind of deal with the psychological wear and tear of your job, but also because you are yourself a subject. You know, you are yourself somebody who is prone to the sorts of things you're looking at in other people, you know. Well, I think the challenge for professional bodies will be to If the argument, and this is an argument I've just been kind of developing in my own mind over the last few days, I'm going to be reasonably kind of modest about it, but it, it hasn't been tested, but if we say that, we would like to live in a world in which professionals see that working alongside other professionals in ways which challenge their practice and in ways in which they work together on problem solving, and that is integral to professional development, integral to what we should expect to professionals. The first thing is professional organizations simply to accept that principle. And that is, I think, a big journey for them to go on. You know, that's not, I don't think many professionals currently think that they should have to go through a process as challenging as that, and which requires so much investment from them. And I don't think many organizations that employ those professionals think that is necessary. So the first thing is to make that a new norm. I think we're a long way away from that. And that might be particularly challenging professional organizations because, of course, a lot of them make a lot of money out of a much more traditional model of, you know, courses and qualifications and professional, you know, updates, as it were. So if those organizations are looking at this model, this richer model, this more bottom-up model, they might say to themselves, well, how are we going to make any money out of this? Because we make a lot of money out of people coming along and doing two-day courses or going online and getting accredited. No, but that may just be a reflection of my ignorance. But look, I mean, I think that if we go back to the schools context, one of the things that I've found really powerful was we just completed a piece of work, the RSA in Suffolk, around a framework for school improvement, because Suffolk's the third least successful local authority in the country. And one of the report is called No School in Ireland, and the idea of school collaboration runs all the way through the report. But one of the things we emphasize is the need for collaboration, and that includes collaboration around professional development. It has got to be rigorous and robust, because one of the things that we found quite shocking was that there were in Suffolk lots of partnerships going on that were incredibly shallow, which were okay. Well, let me give a specific example. So for me, what rigor means is that there is an explicit explicit commitment to a change outcome, which is going to emerge from that professional development process. It isn't just people sitting together and having a chat and looking at a PowerPoint presentation or whatever it might be. It is, there is a change we are trying to achieve together, and we are working together as professionals in order to make this change happen. And it's a change in our own practice, but it's also a change out there in the real world. That's why it's an action research based way of working. So one example I would give of how this doesn't happen is in Suffolk, I went a couple of times to meetings of pyramids. That's secondary schools and primary schools working together, and professionals in secondary schools and primary schools meeting together. And I asked them, what conversations do you have around key stage three progress for pupils? So presumably, I said to them, one of the things you discuss is that pupils leave primary school at the end of key stage two, they arrive at secondaries. Often they lose a lot in that summer holiday, particularly boys. So you must have a lot of conversations about, you know, what happens in key stage pre-progression and what that means for the primaries and the secondaries. And what I found was they weren't even looking at the data. You know, and so they were meeting. And then when I accused them, I've heard I was quite, when I said to them, I bet you, you're carrying on in the primary schools, blaming the secondaries for the fact that kids don't progress. And in the secondaries, blaming the primaries and saying, oh, well, these level fours and level fives, they're for the birds. They weren't really that bright. When they arrived with us, they could hardly read and write. I said, I bet you that's still going on, isn't it? So for me, a rigorous process of professional development in that context would be those professionals in the primary and the secondary working together to achieve a concrete and measurable change in terms of outcomes across transition and challenging each other's practice through that. So, you know, the richest form of professional learning and development is focused on trying to achieve a change and professionals working with each other to observe each other's practice and to challenge and support each other in order that collectively they achieve a change. And that's, for me, the richest possible account of what I would understand by professional learning and development. Well, I think there's a whole number of, if one thinks, for example, of the school setting, there are a whole number of institutions that could take responsibility. You know, National College, of course, has put a huge amount of emphasis on this stuff and done a lot of really important work on it. But I think you said I put the responsibility, the onus on the individual. Actually, I wouldn't. I mean, I think that, you know, what we know about school collaboration is that what is critical to it is whole organisation commitment. You know, this kind of professional learning development takes time. You need to give people the space for it. If the organisation is not committed to it, it's going to be much, much harder for it to be real. So the organisations need to be committed to it. I think in the end, though, it's about norming. It's about creating a new norm so that professionals, whatever profession we're talking about, the question, there is an expectation that on a reasonably regular basis, they work with colleagues, preferably from other organisations outside their own institution, in a process of learning and development oriented towards achieving a real and tangible change in their practice. And that just becomes normal. And if you were talking to a lawyer or an architect or a teacher or a police officer or whatever, and they kind of said that all they did was they did their job and occasionally they went on courses, you'd kind of think, well, you're not really very ambitious then, either for yourself or for the outcomes that you're achieving. So that goes to the question, how do you generate new norms? And I think the way you generate new norms is that it has to be reinforced from all sorts of, it has to be reinforced from the top and from the bottom and through, I kind of have a basic model of social change that says that social change comes from three pressures: individual aspiration, hierarchy, and from kind of solidarity. And so new norms will emerge when individuals aspire to this kind of professional learning and development, when those in authority provide sticks and carrots, which encourage that kind of activity, and where peer pressure within the profession creates that as something which people feel that they want to do in order to be respected by their colleagues. Yeah, absolutely. Although government has to encourage it to happen, but government has to be a gardener, not an architect. That is to say, you know, government has to recognise that unless it works with the natural flow of people's aspirations and the things they're trying to achieve in their professional practice, if government imposes frameworks, then people will tick boxes and you'll get lowest common denominator processes. So government has to be quite subtle about how it is it reinforces this practice, because if I'm right that this in the end boils down to a process which is deeply embedded in what people are trying to achieve in their jobs, at this particular moment in their career, and that it is psychologically challenging. You have to commit yourself to it. You have to commit to the fact that in this process, your own practice is going to be opened up. You enter into the process wanting to be a slightly different person at the end of it than you were at the beginning, and your practice to be different. You can't mandate that kind of thing. You know, you can create the right context for it. You can help it to become more of a norm. But if you force people to do it, it is inherently counterproductive. No, you know, the only thing I do is I end up with this, which is, because I've kind of described this incredibly ambitious, idealistic kind of notion of how professionals should see themselves, and I should admit that I don't do it myself. And, you know, part of the reason for the zeal with which I describe this is I kind of, you know, I ought to be, every couple of years or whatever, I ought to get together with people who run institutions like I do, and we ought to kind of work together on a you know, sets of challenges and changes. And I ought to recognize, you know, and I, actually I sit here, the chief executive of the RSA, and I think how often have I really opened myself up and talked to people who also run organizations? And how much could I have got out of that if I'd committed myself to it? And, you know, I need my chair of trustees to so what would change my practice? And I think it would be that to know that when I went for a future job interview, if I couldn't describe having been involved in such a process, it wouldn't look good. If my chair of trustees expected me to be doing it and was saying to me, Matthew, I'm going to create some real time so that you can do this and do this properly. And if my executive team, the next tier of management down, said, Matthew, if you want us to accept your authority, you know, you want us to accept that you challenge us. What are you doing to get challenged yourself? You know, so there are multiple ways in which I could be incentivized and encouraged to do this myself, but it doesn't yet happen. So I guess we've got a long way to go. Thank you very much. Bye.